exhibition number 21060, Reel 3.
Peter Jones, Reel 3.
Yes. And our men, of course, are very much at home in this sort of terrain. After all, they come from Nepal, and Nepal is, you couldn't find anywhere more mountainous. And because they live and come from the mountains, they're stockily built, short legs, strong legs, and they like goats travelling across the hillside, and they can cross hilly terrain twice as fast as the average European. So they're very much at home. And our general, who himself was a second Gurkha, General Tuka, he thought this is our country for not only the Gurkha but the Indian soldier as well, and he could take advantage of it. Whereas that usually the British soldier, he was pretty good in them at hill mountain warfare as well, but he's obviously not as expert as the Gurkha or the Indian, and he was usually, and that's the beauty of the of a Indian division, which always had, or usually had, a British battalion, an Indian battalion, and a Gurkha battalion in each brigade. And for a set piece attack, the British battalion would probably be better than anybody else. He could work to a timetable, and so the British battalion was probably given the task of breaching any anti-tank ditches or defences. The Indian battalion could do that, not as well as the British, but well enough. And then the Gurkha battalion would take on any mountain warfare, although each could do the others as well. But here we were in a situation at Wadi Akrit where you had an anti-tank ditch and anti-tank defences, against which normally you would have an artillery barrage on a set timetable, and that was best carried out by a British battalion, and that's what happened. And then there was a country which was suitable for an Indian battalion, and finally the Indian battalion could do the mountain one as well, and the Gurkha battalion. And Wadi Akrit had all three. And we had the fourth Indian had the capability of making the most of each of these elements.
Can you take me through your personal experiences at Wadi Akrit, please?
Yeah. Well, our sister Gurkha battalion was in the other brigade, seven brigade. We were in five brigade. And they were given the task of starting the attack on the enemy position by carrying out a silent attack before the main attack on the positions behind the anti-tank line. So they did a silent advance. It was a silent attack into the mountains. And it was jolly successful. And by achieving the objectives in the, on the mountains, they threatened the whole Wadi Akra's position from the left flank. My battalion was in 5 Brigade, and they followed up and went into the hilly, mountainous area between the mountains on the left and the anti-tank ditch on the right, anti-tank defences. But the hard work was definitely done by 7 Brigade, and particularly our sister town, 2nd Gurkha. So when day broke, the defences had been breached. I have mentioned 51 Division, the Highland Division, who attacked the mountain feature by the sea on the right. So to get this, make this clear, there was Romana, a mountain about 2 miles wide, I suppose, between the sea and the anti-tank ditch. Then you had the anti-tank ditch and the the rolling hillside behind the anti-tank ditch, and then the great mountains on the left flank. So you had mountains on the left, the anti-tank ditch with rolling hills in the middle, and Romana, the lone mountain on the right. 51 Div attacked Romana successfully. 50 Div, behind a barrage, went for the defences behind the anti-tank ditch. And 4th Indian, with 7 Brigade leading at the mountains on the left flank. At dawn, most positions had been taken. And my battalion exploited the break-in on the left behind 2nd Gurkhas. and we and they were successful. They drove the Germans out, and my company was there as well. And once the Germans had withdrawn, which they did on our front at about midday on the second day, in fact, the Germans had been driven out, and although they counterattacked, particularly at Romana, counterattacked Romana, because from our position we could see transport unloading Germans behind Romana, and then the Germans forming up into formations and trying to counterattack and regain their lost ground. But it was a hopeless task from their point of view, because our gunners could see the transport unloading the German infantry and brought down such massive fire that they were just dispersed without any trouble at all, and they gave up.
How much fighting did D Company have to do at Wadi Akaris?
Not a great deal. because we were most of the enemy there were Italians, and a more despicable lot you can't imagine. They would get behind. I mean, it was rocky terrain, and they'd stay there and fire on fixed lines, probably. If not, they'd just pop their head above a rock and fire, and then go to ground again. But when you came up to attack them, they surrendered. They were dreadful people. And that's what happened for most of the time. We attacked, and they surrendered. We just had to pass these hundreds of Italians. And we just sent them on their way back through our lines, because we didn't want to be have hundreds and hundreds of Italians to look after. So we just told them to march. And they were delighted to do that. A lot of them carrying their suitcases. Anyway, the Germans counterattacked on our front and at Romana, and they were very brave in taking us on, because they had no hope. We were too strong, and we beat off every counterattack. And by evening, the Germans had decided it was a hopeless task, and they retreated and went across the plain to the next position, which was infeasible, about 40 miles north. Where we followed and regrouped, and that's where our next battle was. Jebel Garchi, or it's in the books they call it Infeasible, the Battle of Infeasible. And that's our final battle.
Can you tell me about your personal experiences there, please?
Yes. Well, that's right. Now, Jebel Garchi was a large, bald mountain feature. Now, I've got photographs which I can show you. But it really was the start of the final Tunis mountain features position, which was about 60 miles in a sort of arc, 60 miles in length, going round from Medjez el Bab round Garchi to the coast. And behind that was Tunis and Bizerta and Cape Bon, and the final German position. And there's a great debate went on. Monty wanted to do his famous right jab. Up the line of the coast, using armor as much as possible. Whereas other generals thought it might be better to take advantage of the mountainous country and send in the infantry divisions to take mountain by mountain. Inevitably, you get a compromise, and the armoured tried their right jab, were partially successful, but the mountainous country really was only you could only assault it by infantry, and that's what happened. But Jebel Ghaci was this great mountain, bare, stony. You couldn't dig. You could only build fire positions. And alongside Jebel Ghaci was a great feature called Tukruna. It really like a castle, stark, coming out of the ground, and that was allotted to the New Zealand division. Anyway, we did our patrols and were ready for the battle. on the 19th of May, 19th of April, 1943, the New Zealanders went for Tukruna, and we went for Weem, 4th Indian, particularly our brigade, Fire Brigade. We were given the task of attacking the Jebel Ghaci, the mountain. But the enemy were too strong, and we got a foothold. The Indian battalion was the leading battalion. They got a foothold, but they couldn't make as much progress as we'd hoped. And so my battalion the CO was did the clever thing really. He decided to peel off to the right and change the axis of advance to about 500 yards further right and try and get round the German position. And my company was the leading company of the battalion. and we attacked in the early hours of the 20th of April. And it was an almost almighty battle. But we were successful.
Can you describe the battle as you saw it, please?
I can.
Just from memory?
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, so I said, the CO decided to peel off to the right and try and get round the enemy position. And he sent for me and said, it was then about 2 a.m. He said, all right, get onto the mountain and take the highest feature you can find, and I want my battalion established before daylight. And so it was dark, but there was a moon, which helped. And I just sent off a company Like you could see the next feature silhouetted against the sky. And I just said to that platoon commander, "That's your objective. Take it. And when you've taken it, you give covering fire to the next platoon." This is all sort of mountain warfare techniques. And this is what happened. We started with the silent attack on the first feature. Unfortunately, we were able to take it without much trouble. But then the Germans just realized what was happening and reinforced that flank in time to meet our next assault company, sorry, platoon. And this is where the battle really started, and it was all hand-to-hand stuff. And the Gurkha, as you know, has this famous weapon, the kukri. And he drew his kukri, and it was absolute slaughter, hand-to-hand stuff. Occasionally a bayonet would be used, but usually it's a kukri. And we took our objective.
Were you in amongst that hand-to-hand fighting yourself?
Yeah, but I didn't actually use a kukri. A section element, light machine gun. The gun crew were killed. And I then took over the gun and fired it. Surprisingly, it was quite good effect. But I'd been wounded in the neck a bit earlier, but not badly enough to stop me doing my job and firing this gun.
Was there any danger of your hitting the Gurkhas?
No, I don't think. I mean, I've been trained to fire light machine guns, and it was mountainous, so your field of fire was limited, and the enemy were concentrated. I mean, they were never more than 40, 50 yards away, and usually, as I said, it was hand-to-hand stuff.
But you said...
And he withdrew.
You said the Gurkhas were in amongst them, were they?
Yes. Yeah. In amongst them. But it was pretty fluid. They'd get amongst them. The battle would ebb and flow. The Germans would retreat, counterattack, and we would try and get round them, and they were trying to get. So it was a great struggle. And most of it, and all of it, in the dark, of course, except there was a slight moon. But grenades were going off, flashes from the guns. So you get glimpses of a group of people there, and if they were German, you attacked them. In fact, my platoon commander had an extraordinary adventure. He took his position and then went forward to do a reconnaissance. And he came across a German trenches, a German sort of, I suppose it's about a section position. and they were firing at the other battalion, the Indian battalion, who, if you remember, were attacking up the main axis of advance, and we'd gone slightly right to avoid it, get off this axis of advance. And so that German section had they were focused on the Indian battalion to their right. Anyway, this platoon commander, Dewan Singh, his name was, he came across this position with the Germans in their trenches, and he attacked them with his cookery. He killed four. But when he killed the fourth, the chap made such a noise that more Germans were alerted and turned and came after him. They got his cookery off him, and started to try and kill him with it. But they weren't very skillful. And there was so much blood about, the cookery was slippery, and they were unsuccessful in killing him, or even wounding him. But his head was in a frightful mess, because a few minutes later I appeared and saw this. And told him, for God's sake, go back and get somebody to bandage you up, because he'd been cut all over his head. The Germans had used the sharp end of the cookery, but more often the blunt end. But he was in a mess, and he lost a lot of blood. So, as I said, I sent him off with an escort to get the stretcher bearers to tend to his wound.
Did you not have a helmet in the battle?
Yes, but he'd lost it at some stage. Or had he been knocked off his head? Anyway, in those days, helmets weren't used perhaps as often as they should have been. They were heavy, as you know, and uncomfortable. And if it was hot, it was very uncomfortable. So perhaps they weren't used as much as they should have been. Where was I?
You told me about how you intervened in this fight with your platoon commander.
Yes. Anyway, this battle went on backwards and forwards, hand to hand, and then you paused. But we were getting short of ammunition. So I got hold of my sergeant major and said, now your job is to make sure that we don't run out of ammunition. So gather as many men as you need and send them off to other companies or to battalion headquarters and come back with as much ammunition as you can. And this he did. But on the way, typical of the man, he met the company sergeant major of the next company, and he said, look here, I've just killed my first German. What are you going to do about it? And so they got together and went off to find more Germans. And the next time I saw my chap, I said, you gathering ammunition? And he said, yes, but I've also killed 4 Germans. And I said, really? That's not what I told you to do. I told you to collect ammunition. He said, well, I'm doing both. I've collected ammunition, and now I'm collecting heads. With my friend in the next door company.
Was he decapitating them?
Yeah.